Good evening. If you would, please turn your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 25. Proverbs chapter 25 is where we're going to begin here in just a moment. It is good to have several visitors with us. Our crowd is going to thin out some for those who went off to Colorado camp. And so I know it's also great. This is going to sound silly, but I really mean this. It's great that the Hagimos made it back down from the mountain. I now understand how dangerous mountains can be. Because there's another guy here that's our regular visitor. I used to brag to people that we have a guy who's a guardian for the Space Force that worships with us on Sunday and Wednesday night. But now I'll never see him different. I'll see him differently from now on. He was the fearless guide that took 10 of us to the top of a 14er and back. And his backup guide, I don't know why he needed a backup, but if he was going to fall out, Rusty, you know, was there with him too. And what was interesting about this climb with all 10 of us up and down this 14er was, the two most experienced, probably best climbers, they were always in the back. And it was there because I think they were making sure that us stragglers weren't dead on the mountain. So it was great to share that experience yesterday with Rusty and Jonathan Deffenbaugh and then all the rest of the crew that got to go up and down that mountain. So good to have you guys that are visiting here with us. So yeah, we're in Proverbs chapter 25. And I put a picture up here that is somewhat connected to the Proverbs. I wanted to look for a royal family because Proverbs 25 has some things to say about kings, but royals all have this kind of stereotypical image in my mind, so I wanted the one that was different. And the thing about this proverb, Proverbs chapter 25, is that it's about kings and neighbors. And so what I liked about this royal, it's the royal family of Morocco, that's who they are, the Moroccan royal family, is it looked like some of them could be kings and some of them look like my next door neighbor. And I just love that beautiful picture, all the bright colors and their connection here. And that's what Proverbs chapter 25 is going to be about. How to deal with kings and how to deal with neighbors and all those that are come in between. And how the kings should deal with their neighbors as well. And so you look at Proverbs chapter 25, beginning in verse 1. It says, these also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. And so you have here two kings of Israel connected with this chapter. And these kings had a reputation for being some of the wisest of the kings of Israel. Solomon, of course, with his prayer asking for wisdom, and then Hezekiah with his great religious reformation. People think of these as kind of the kings of wisdom here. And so they have a role to play in this gathering of the Proverbs in chapter 25. So we're going to begin here by reading just verses 2 through 7. Verses 2 through 7. Oh, I was going to show you also, here's the outline then of where we're going with this. I forgot to click the PowerPoint on that. We'll have kings and messengers and a lot of subjects underneath that one. And then we'll do wisdom for self and others. Let's go ahead. We'll actually read verses 1 or 2 through 15. It says, it is the glory of God to conceal things, but the glory of kings is to search things out. As the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings is unsearchable. Take away the dross from the silver and the smith has material for a vessel. Take away the wicked from the presence of the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. Do not put yourself forward in the king's presence, or stand in the place of the great, for it is better to be told, come up here, than to be put lower in the presence of a noble. What your eyes have seen, do not hastily bring into court. For what will you do in the end, when your neighbor puts you to shame? Argue your case with your neighbor himself, and do not reveal another's secret, lest he who hears you bring shame upon you, and your ill repute have no end. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver, like a gold ring or an ornament of gold is a wise reprover to a listening ear. Like the cold of snow in the time of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him. He refreshes the soul of his masters. Like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of a gift he does not give. With patience, a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue will break a bone. A lot of different ideas, I think, that are loosely tied together by kings and messengers. And we're going to say a little bit about each one of these. And so as we saw here at the beginning, these wise kings, they speak about searching things out. A wise king is going to have the humility to say, I need to go learn some more. I need to go search things out. And there's this seeking for wisdom, like we said here in Solomon and Hezekiah. However, the wisest of all people is God. And you'll notice about God, as we know, he has concealed some things. There are secret things that belong to God. And so there's creating this all and mystery about him and his wisdom and our need to submit to him. And so therefore, a wise king will search out much,
But at times he might need to conceal some things. He doesn't have to share everything that he knows. And so as we talk about these kings, some of us may say, well, Coulter, I don't know anybody here that's from the royal family. None of us are kings, but we're all leaders. And so what I want you to do with these proverbs that are to the kings is to translate them into leadership in our own individual realms. We'll say some more about that in a moment here, but that's the idea here. So a leader should have the humility to always be learning, but he doesn't necessarily feel a need to share all that he knows. Verses 4 through 5 here, a silversmith cleans the smudges off of silver to create beauty in that silver. And a wise leader or king must clean his presence from evil for his realm to then be beautiful and full of righteousness. He has to lead by example, by removing the dross or the sin within himself so that others will then want to imitate that beauty. And then verses 6 through 7, some translations have made this verse a little bit tricky here, but it might have sounded familiar to some of you all. It sounds a lot like Luke chapter 14, verses 7 through 11, and a saying of Jesus. It says in Luke 14, beginning in 7, it says, "Now he told a parable to those who were invited. I mean, he noticed how they chose the places of honor, saying to them, 'When you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you be invited by him. And he who invited you both will come and say to you, "Give your place to this person," and then you will begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, "Friend, move up higher." Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. I think I've mentioned to you before that I think a lot of times the parables of Jesus, many of the parables he tells have Old Testament roots within them. Now, that's not just true of the parables. Here you have in this saying, if you now hopefully you see the connection here, in this, well, it's a fairly well-known saying, I think, of Jesus about reminding people to need to be humble so you aren't embarrassed by taking a chief seat. He's using Old Testament ideas here from Proverbs chapter 25. But beyond that little bit of, you know, learning to read the text and see the connections of the Old Testament to Jesus and how Jesus used that, there is a great application here that we all need to remember and not being presumptuous and thinking, yeah, I was invited here to be in the chief seats. And so that is a level of humility, again, that leaders need, and they need to model that, be an example so that their followers will join in to this same level of humility. To have this kind of humility and to have this kind of, hey, am I doing that? It requires self-reflection. And so that's what's needed here. It's what's being called for is reflecting on yourself and how you, the mindset, the mental attitude towards you have towards others. And as we said, this works for all areas of leadership. If you happen to be in leadership in the business world, it works. Political leadership, it works there as well. Spiritual leadership, parental leadership. On and on the list could go as we can use some time in our self-reflection, hopefully that we're doing that, asking and thinking, am I living out my leadership roles in a way that would glorify God? One more thing about the kings, we'll move on to this next section here of the dispute that happens, is don't forget the instruction that God gave the kings in Deuteronomy chapter 17. The way the kings were supposed to do things, they're supposed to write out an entire copy of the law in their hand for themselves. And so I've never actually engaged in this, but I've known of some people who have, is that perhaps me writing out the whole New Testament by my hand would be a way for some of the New Testament words to stick within my heart of the desires that God has for me with the various realms of opportunity and responsibilities he's given me to lead by example, or even perhaps someday by certain roles of authoritative titles or positions. In verses 8 through 10, you see him talking about settling of disputes. This proverb, like the one above, raises an issue of public shame. You don't want to be embarrassed. And so if you don't want to be embarrassed, then learn, have some wisdom here, have the right level of humility. So be careful in taking an issue to court because you may be wrong. Again, this is something that sounds like something we've probably heard from Jesus. In Luke chapter 12, beginning in verse 57, he says there, And why do you not judge for yourselves what is right? As you go with your accuser before the magistrate, make an effort to settle with him on the way, lest he drag you to the judge, and the judge hand you over to the officer, and the officer puts you in prison. I tell you, you will never get out until you've paid the very last penny. This willingness to settle matters privately is, comes up in the Proverbs, but Jesus also taught it. Paul also writes about it in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. And so let's think about the modern day relevance of this. How do you think the world would respond or react to this statement? We need less lawsuits. Yeah, you see, sometimes people object to Christianity because they don't know some of the details that are in there. And we could really be more winsome for Christ in just learning more of the details and finding the angle that would get people interested. Someone says, why are you a Christian? I think he has some good ideas. Well, like what? Okay, hopefully after this morning's lesson, you're going to talk to him about the resurrection. But if that didn't work and you're 2 weeks later, tell me another reason why you like Christianity. I like Christianity because it promises less lawsuits. Now, hold on. I want to hear more about that. Well, if people would follow what the Bible says, you read to them this proverb, read to them the statements of Jesus, what the Bible is asking for is less lawsuits and more private reconciliation of wrongs done to one another. And that might actually appeal to some people. They might be more interested in hearing more about what Christianity has to offer the world, depending on the specifics of what it is that we might be offering to them. And then finally here, or almost finally, being a messenger and receiving a messenger here, criticism is one of the few things that is more blessed to receive than to give, because criticism has the potential to help us reform our character. But what we need to do if we're one who's being the critic, one who's offering criticism, we need to be willing to choose our words carefully. This is hard. I find myself often... just talking to the kids, actually. Just a few minutes ago, I was worried that them growing up around me, one of the bad influences I'm afraid I'm going to be on them is being too critical, too judgmental, too cynical, too much of a skeptic. I used a little bit of some of those different words there. And one of the things that I have to work on, it's not criticism in and of itself may not be a wrong or sinful thing. But what this proverb here is talking about is, be careful how you offer the criticism. Choose your words carefully. Here in this analogy is, choose them as carefully as you would jewelry. Now, that analogy works better for some of you than it does others. I'm not trying to give an excuse for why I don't choose my words more carefully, but Lydia can tell you, that one's not going to work on Dad. When he goes into the jewelry store, he picks the first thing he sees. Yeah, Mom will like this, and I have to stop him. No, she won't. Put it back. Let me show you what she would like. But the idea there is that people have certain tastes, and they're very careful and very intentional, but I'm going to pick this to go with this. And the idea here for jewelry is we ought to think of our words as, are they like, are we choosing our words in the same way like we would choose special jewelry? When we're hearing criticism, do we hear it as someone offering us a gift like jewelry? Or are we defensive and having an attitude of not wanting to receive the criticism? And then verses 13 through 14, Christians should be known as reliable people. And what you have in Matthew chapter 5, verse 37, you're familiar with Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount, let your yes be yes. Here, this proverb is talking about reliable people. That's what people want. People want people who are reliable. And so that's one of the ways that we could spend some time in self-reflection. Do people see me as someone who they can count on? He's going to be consistent. But he's going to keep his word. If he says he's going to be there, he's going to be there. That reliability comes from the Proverbs. It's also, I think, echoed then in Jesus and some of the commands that he gives us. And so the proverb here about a cold air being refreshing after a hot, hard summer. Dark gray clouds, though, are quite depressing whenever they don't offer a drop. You see them coming and you think, oh, surely we're going to finally get that rain, and we don't. Well, this is the effect that reliable people and unreliable people can have on others. We can either be refreshing or we can be very frustrating. And so finally, verse 15, be patient with leaders. One of the leadership realms we mentioned a second ago is parenting. And I will never forget the public prayer I heard one time when I was in Atlanta. One of the men in the congregation had been raised in somewhat of a dysfunctional home. Divided home, at least for sure use that word, maybe not dysfunctional. And he was in his late teens whenever his dad made him make a choice. He said, you can go with your mom and do the church thing, or you come with me to the bar and live life like I have. And he made the choice to go with Dad, and he always regretted that. Luckily, thankfully, God allowed him the opportunity to come back in his 50s, late 50s, I think it was. He came back to the Lord. And he would offer some of the most thoughtful public prayers. And one time when he was praying, he said, "Lord, please help the children not hold against you the sins of their parents." You have to kind of slow down and think about what he's asking for there. What he's saying is, he knew that the parents in the audience, myself included, we're not going to be perfect parents. We're going to make mistakes. And what he wanted was for the children who were listening, hopefully, to that prayer, and even if they weren't listening, he was asking God, "God, help these children to not say, well, now I don't want to be a Christian because of the sins of what I see my mom and dad living with." He could have said that same thing about, "Don't let the members hold the sins of the elders against God. The sins of the deacon against God. The sins of the preacher against God. The sins of the Bible class teacher against God." And I think what I'm trying to get here at is the willingness, the recognition of the need for patience with leaders. And so we don't need wisdom to be careful about how to speak to leaders with soft words, how to be patient when leaders don't always live up to the hopes and aspirations perhaps that we had for them. And there's more about the leadership and patience you can read in Proverbs chapter 14, verses 35 through 15 and verse 1. We're going to keep moving on then into the next section. But I hope that that was some helpful things to think through about kings and messengers, how we interact with leaders in our life. Let's read then the rest of the chapter, beginning in verse 16 through the end. It says, "If you found honey, eat only enough for you, lest you have your fill of it and vomit it out. Let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. A man who bears false witness against his neighbor is like a war club or a sword or a sharp arrow. Trusting in a treacherous man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth or a foot that slips. Whoever sings songs to a heavy heart is like one who takes off a garment on a cold day and like vinegar on soda. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. The north wind brings forth rain, and a backbiting tongue, angry looks. It is better to live in a corner of the housetop than in a house shared with a quarrelsome wife. Like cold water to a thirsty soul, so is good news from a far country. Like a muddied spring or a polluted fountain is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked. It is not good to eat much honey, nor is it glorious to seek one's own glory. A man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls." I guess another way you could summarize this section was self-control. But we labeled it here, wisdom for self and others, because there's all these different things kind of blending in together. But let's work our way through this section of the Proverbs, and then the lesson will be yours. Obviously, the need for self-control begins this section in verses 16 through 17. There is such a thing as eating too much. Likewise, there is such a thing as visiting too much. And so moms would often advise their kids when I was growing up, I don't know if they still say this, don't wear out your welcome. You know, because we had all these other neighborhood kids that we'd run around with, and apparently I spent too much time down there at Jason Beckham's house. And mom's never said this, but I'd be surprised if she maybe called home and told her that a few times. Said, "Get your son home, he's here too much." But some people today may need the opposite advice. Now, this isn't into Proverbs, but I would offer this as well. Some people may need to be told, "Let your foot be more frequent in your neighbor's house, or else you'll become lonesome and they'll forget you." We have a world that is making it increasingly easy. And I feel really weird right now. Someone's just telling me about some people who are in a medical situation in which it's medically justified that they don't leave their home right now. And so they are ordering goods to be shipped to their house. I want to make sure to be clear. I'm not talking about this. I'm speaking like the Proverbs. Painting with a broad brush, not meaning to apply to every single specific situation. But there are some people who the world has made it possible for them to never leave their home. And they're getting pretty lonely and depressed. It's because they're not stepping out and getting involved. So the opposite of this proverb may need to be reworded for some people today. But there is also, yes, those who probably still are wearing out their welcome and need to know when that is. Have the self-reflection that we talked about earlier to know when it's time to go. And then he warns in verse 18 through 20 about three different types of people to be aware of. And, the unreliable, the liar, Got to find my place here in my notes, because I've gotten my notes turned around here. Man who bears false witness. The treacherous man, I've labeled here, it was different in different translations. So I've labeled it as the unreliable, like we alluded to earlier. But a violent man could, I guess, be another way to do it, or treacherous man that you see here. Either one of those you want to be aware of, that these people exist. Have a plan for how to handle these kind of people. Realize the danger that they are, the pain that they can cause. And then verse 20. I labeled it in the PowerPoint the unreflective. When I had more room for more words on my notes here, I called it the energetic goofball. There's a lot of interesting commentary about this person here in verse 20, who is obnoxious during a depressing time. It's one who doesn't know what is appropriate, when it is appropriate. And I would say, too, about this in our culture, again, the opposite may be needed, is that it seems that some people, and I think this is still a very small minority, some of you may feel like it's a bigger percentage than I would, but there's a minority of people who seem to be too easily bothered by hearty singing, don't know how to have fun at some point in their moment of life. Everything's so serious, everything's so sour, everything's so dire. And so we got to maybe make sure we also think through that, is not to use these proverbs as a whipping stick, to try to tell everybody else around us how they're not doing things the way we'd like for them to do it. And then finally we come to a passage probably, again, familiar to you. You've heard it in the words of Jesus, love your enemy, how to treat your enemy. Our enemy will be either humiliated by receiving help from one they despise, and that's how they get their judgment from the hot coals, or it means something else. Lots of debate about this. You can read this in different translations. You'll see different study notes, study Bibles talk about what this exactly means here. I would say, tell you that at this moment in time, the option that seems to make the most sense is there was this ritual in the ancient Near Eastern world that at some times, and this may be what's going on, is that they would put a tray of hot coals on their head as a symbol of repentance, as a symbol of saying, I need the purification. You might find a way of connecting this to Isaiah and the hot coals that purified his tongue. But I would tell you that a lot of the different explanations I read about this, all of them have some strengths and weaknesses. At times, some of them seem to be stretching scriptural connections. So the end result here, what we know the New Testament tells us to do is, from Jesus and Paul, love your enemy. And so Paul concludes his treatise on love in Romans chapter 12 with this proverb as well. So however you're going to make this mean, it isn't that you do niceness with the intent of, oh, I'm going to be nice so it hurts you. That's not the idea of when Jesus is talking about it, nor when Paul's talking about it. I'm not sure that would be the best way to understand these heaping hot coals of fire upon their head, although there are plenty that do understand it that way. So that's one way, I guess, that maybe we should stay open to. If you have more information on that you'd like to share with me after worship, I'd love to hear it. And then finally there in verses 23 through 24 for this middle section here, the chill wind of slander and a scolding wife. Again, as we did earlier with Proverbs, transfer these to whatever gender you are. These are words to a son, so that's why it's talking about his wife. You could equally have a husband who's scolding all the time, and it'd be better off for the wife to live in the doghouse than live in a house with a husband who's scolding her all the time. And so that same proverb there in verse 24 could apply either way. But back in verse 23, we accidentally skipped over that one, is just as the north wind brings rain and with it cold air, in the same way a sly tongue can bring cold looks. So those of you who have quick wit about you, we know some of those people just seem like they always have something slick to say. For who doesn't live near us is asked, you know, is Scott more like Emma or Lydia? And for the longest time it was, well, he's still young enough, I can't quite tell which one he's like. But over about the last 2 years, what I learned about him is he has a quick tongue. And so what I'm going to have to teach him is be careful with that slick tongue, because while it may get laughs from your mom and dad, it may get cold looks too if you say it to the wrong person. So just be careful how you use that sly tongue that some people have, because that's what it can bring in verse 23. Good water and bad water. What kind of drinking water would you rather have, cold or muddy? Well, we know, of course, we want cold water, and there's nothing more refreshing than good news from afar, and there's nothing more frustrating than a good man who has ruined himself. And so this proverb talks about the ways that that can happen. Again, you see a connection, but this one, to 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 5 through 7. I failed to put that on the screen, so I apologize. Let me actually flip over there and read that with you. 2 Corinthians chapter 7, you see how this worked out in Paul's life. 2 Corinthians chapter 7, beginning in verse 5. Paul writes there to the Corinthians. He says, "For even when we came into Macedonia, our bodies had no rest, but we were afflicted at every turn, fighting without and fear within. But God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus, and not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted by you, as he told us of your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced still more." Paul was in a position there where he needed to hear some good news. And so as we've talked about before, it never hurts to share good news and to bring that refreshing, that nice cold water on a hot day can happen whenever we share good news with others. Finally then, 27 through 28, coming full circle, don't eat too much honey and don't eat too much glory. This is something that I've seemed to observe in life that's kind of difficult. You need a certain level of confidence to be able to achieve success. But what can happen is we can enjoy that confidence a little too much. And we see that confidence can bring us that success. We can be overindulged in our glory the same way you can overindulge in honey. And so when we think too highly of ourselves, what happens is we're opening the door for Satan to walk right in. Take heed he who thinks he stands, lest he fall. I hope some way these proverbs here were helpful as we think through about how to be self-reflecting, self-discerning about ourselves. Think about the way that we are messengers, the way that we are leaders, and the way that we interact with others.